Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Peter James. He has a new book out. It's called Dead Man's Grip. He joins us by telephone from somewhere out in the great Midwest. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thank you, Vic. It's nice to be on it.
Peter, our listeners are probably detecting just a slight accent there. You're not from America, are you?
No, I come from that kind of quaint little country across the we used to kind of control America, and then you kicked us out. But you know, I don't hold a grudge anymore.
Are you actually from Sussex?
Yeah, I was born and bred in Brighton and Sussex, and I've kind of always had a home in that area. And for a crime writer, it's actually a great place because Brighton, to the outside world, looks like a really nice seaside city. But in fact, it's had a very long criminal history. I mean, it was back in the 1930s. It was known as the crime capital of the UK and the murder capital of Europe.
I didn't know. I thought it was just a nice place to go pretend you were getting a tan.
Yeah, no, it's a nice place to go pretend you're getting a tan, get robbed, kill someone.
Now, how did it get that reputation? Give us a little background.
Okay, well, Brighton always had a history as a kind of racy seaside resort. It's how it kind of grew up in the late sort of 1700s. And then King George IV, when he was Prince Regent, built an enormous palace there called the Royal Pavilion. It's a huge, weird place. It's sort of Indian-Chinese influence. And he kept his sort of mistress secretly down there. And the whole place became immensely fashionable in the sort of 1900s, 1820, 1830. And in 1841, they built a railway line from London to Brighton. And all the villains in London thought, much more fun to be at this. Because, you know, being in London in 1840, unless you were seriously rich, was a pretty horrible place. And all the villains, they decamped to Brighton. And they brought the kind of protection rackets. They brought the illegal gambling, cockfighting, prostitution, you know, you name it, and they bought it. And Brighton sort of, because it had that kind of racy, it had always been known as a dirty weekend resort. So it was a place people took their mistresses because the king had done it. Uh-huh. And it's kind of never lost that. Graham Greene wrote a wonderful book called Brighton Rock in 1937, which was about, you know, a gang in Brighton. And it was a very big influence on me, that novel, because I read that as a 14-year-old growing up in this city, and I thought, wow.
So the railroad did it.
The railroad did it.
Peter James joins us. His novel, Dead Man's Grip, is a novel featuring Detective Roy Grace. Is this number 7 in the series?
It's number 7 in the series, yes.
This is quite an interesting series. I read the previous book, and I know these books are clearly standalones, but there's also the little thread, the little reward, because when you're reading Dead Man's Grip, this woman goes out and she gets these really nice shoes, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I'm getting a flashback, and the next thing you know, there's a cab driver, and I said, oh, this is just a little reward Peter's given the readers of the previous book.
It's fun to connect the books, because you're asking about shoes, and of course, Dead Like You, which is the previous one, which is on paperback, that's about a rapist who targets women wearing sexy stiletto-heeled shoes, which was actually drawn from a true-life case. There was a guy up in the north of England in the 1980s who stalked women late at night outside bars and nightclubs and would attack them, rape them, and then take their shoes. And when the police finally caught him, he had 126 pairs of stiletto-heeled shoes, each beautifully wrapped in cellophane, in a cellar underneath his office.
He didn't live on a boat then?
No. But the taxi driver did. But
yeah.
I'm fascinated by, a big part of the reason I write crime novels is I'm just fascinated by how many of the worst crimes are actually committed by seemingly very kind of respectable human beings. you know, this the rapist. He was a guy called James Lloyd. He was 47 years old. He was happily married. He was a Freemason. He had two kids who adored him. He was a manager of a huge business. And he just happened to have this weird thing in him that made him go out at night and rape people and take their shoes as trophies.
Hmm. The thing I like about your books and this series particularly is that we have these really dark crimes happening, yet you managed to inject an element of humor. For instance, in that previous book, the cab driver, not only is he a shoe fetishist, but he's a toilet fetishist. And I had to laugh every time you brought this up.
I wanted, because I try to explore, you know, different aspects of the human condition, and I'd always been interested to write about somebody with Asperger's syndrome, and I got invited to go to a big home quite near Brighton for autistic children and adults too, and I got taken into this room to meet this guy, and he was about, I really modeled the yak on him, and he was about 30, and first, you know, I'm introduced to him. This is Peter James. He writes crime novels. And the guy says, would you like to see... He says, do you have a high flush or low flush toilet in your house? First words he says to me.
Uh-huh.
I said, oh, I'm not quite sure. Why? He said, I prefer high flush. He said, I've got 450 lavatory chains. Would you like to see them? I thought, this guy's fascinating. And then he said, you know, there's a really good example of a high flush toilet near Worthing Pier. You know, the only half an hour's drive, I could take you there if you're interested. I go, thank you, not quite my thing.
In the new book, Dead Man's Grip, we have your main character, Detective Roy Grace. For our listeners and readers who aren't familiar with him, can you give us a little capsule biography of this gentleman?
Certainly. Roy Grace, when we first meet him in the first book in the series, Dead Simple, he's coming up to his 39th birthday, and we learn that 9 years earlier, on his 30th birthday, he came home, and his wife, Sandy, who he loved and adored, has vanished. A car's gone, and for 9 years, he's been looking for her. He has no idea whether she was abducted, whether she had an accident, whether she committed suicide, whether she ran off with a lover or decided to go and reinvent herself. So he's tried everything, including going to mediums, psychics. And although he's functioning as a very effective homicide detective, he has this kind of personal puzzle of his own. And with each story, we learn kind of a little bit more about that mystery. And Roy's a really nice, good, warm, and caring human being, as a lot of good homicide detectives are. And he's actually based on a real-life police officer who I met 15 years ago called Dave Gaylor. And I was going to Dave's office. I'm a great stickler for research, and I spend a day a week throughout the year with the police, mostly down in Sussex, but I've been out with police here in the States too. For Dead Man's Grip, I was out with the NYPD quite a bit. And I remember going to this guy's office 15 years ago, and it was a tip, and there were plastic crates all over the floor full of manila folders. I said, are you moving office? And he said, no, these are my dead friends.
Uh-huh.
I thought, great, I've met the only weirdo in Sussex CID. And he then explained, he said, these are all cold case files. He said, I've just been put in charge of reopening them.
Uh-huh.
He said, each one of these crates contains the files of an unsolved murder, and I'm the last chance the victims have for justice and the last chance the families have for closure. And I loved that very human image. And he and I became good friends. And he'd start to, I'd discuss each book in advance of writing it with him. And he reads my Roy Grace novels every 100 pages as I write them and tells me how Roy would think as a real detective.
Did this relationship begin after you were burgled?
You're right. What happened is it was quite a time before that. And my wife and I were burgled, and I'd just actually written my first ever book, which is a very bad spy thriller, which I keep out of print now. And this detective came and he looked at the... He said, "Is that you?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, if you ever need any research help..." And he gave me his card. My wife and I got friendly with him and his wife, and she was also a police officer. And I started to realize that, you know, they'd invite us to a barbecue and to a boxing fight and to this and that. And I realized all of their friends, almost without exception, were other police officers. And not just because that's who they work with, but it's kind of their comfort zone. You know, when police officers socialize, they can, if they're with other officers, they can talk about confidential cases they're working on. They can talk about the really kind of gruesome things. And what you're saying about the humor in my books, and I do try to reflect the kind of the police, particularly in homicide, where they're dealing with the most terrible things, and people like the road traffic police who deal with the most horrible accidents. The way they keep sane is through this kind of gallows humor. Give you an example. I remember there was a really bad accident near where I lived, and this guy rolled a car through a field and was impaled by the fence post and sadly died. And the traffic officer I was talking to said, "Yeah, his wife only sent him out for a steak."
Oh. Ba-boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of bad accidents, that's kind of how you start Dead Man's Grip.
Yeah, one of the things that I do like to write about is how things can so easily kind of spiral out of control from something very small. In the second Roy Grace book, Looking Good Dead, I have a guy picks up a CD on a train that somebody's left behind, and through doing a good act of trying to return it to them, ends up involved in a snuff movie ring and people trying to kill him. Mm. And in Dead Man's Grip, the story basically kicks off with a it's a mother, and she's single, and she's got a 12-year-old son, and she drops him at school, and she's late, and she's in a hurry, and she's driving along a road in Brighton, and her phone rings, and she looks down, and she does the right thing. She doesn't answer it. When she looks up, there's a cycle, a 20-year-old boy on a bicycle coming straight at her, and she swerves and misses him and crashes into a shop window. And a van behind her hits the cyclist and knocks him across the road. And a great big heavy truck coming the other way then flattens him. And she is at the scene. She's breathalyzed. And she'd been out on a really bad date the night before and drank too much. And she's over the limit and is arrested for drink driving. Hmm. And they then discover that the truck driver has been doing what they call in England out of hours. He's driven like 18 hours nonstop, which is an offense. And the van driver's disappeared, and they identify the dead boy. And he's from New York, and the reason he's in Brighton is he fell in love with an English girl and came over to be at university with her. And they then discover that his mother is the daughter of the New York mafia godfather. And when she finds out what happened, she gets on the plane, comes to England, and she goes loopy, and she says, "I want everyone in that accident tortured and killed."
Yes.
That's the starting point.
Yes, and I didn't want to give away any of that stuff, and I gave you carte blanche to do it, and that gets our listeners and readers started off on this lovely mystery, Dead Man's Grip. And speaking of your humor and gruesome humor, when we find out where the book title comes from, we just go, "Oh, oh." That is so sick, but so funny.
Yeah, it's a police expression. I wouldn't give it away now. But
No. They've got to earn it.
But I'll tell you something really chilling. I got very friendly with several police officers in New York when I wrote the fourth Roy Grace novel, which was about a man who used the awful day of 9/11 to fake his disappearance because he should have been at a meeting at the South Tower. And I got friendly in particular with two NYPD cops who were in Brooklyn that day, and they literally shot over the Brooklyn Bridge just after the first plane hit, and they were very involved in the whole subsequent aftermath. But their role principally has been busting the mafia for the last 30 years, and I've been out on patrol with them quite a bit, and so I went over to see them when I was researching Dead Man's Grip because I wanted to find out to what extent the mafia still today does exist. And they took me out, they went out for a meal, and they said, okay, talk us through the story. So I told them what I've just told you about the setup. And they both looked at me, and this really sent a chill through me. They said, you know this happened?
Oh.
And I said, what? And it was apparently John Gotti, who was the godfather of all the New York crime families.
Uh-huh.
About, I think it was about 25 years ago, his son was knocked off his bicycle by a drunk driver and killed, and Gotti's wife said, I want that guy.
Hmm.
And 2 weeks later, he disappeared, and the police know that he was tortured and killed. He was never found again. So that kind of, I thought,
This mobster family in New Jersey, they hire a contract killer, and from my aspect as a reader, I couldn't wait to get to the sections where we're inside the brain of this contract killer, because you have come up with an amazing character here. Even though he's a really horrible person, you kind of like him because his personality is so strange. How did you come up with this guy?
Well, you know, I always base characters, I draw from real-life people that I've met. And I met this very strange character many years back who was kind of very small, very perfectly formed, actually very intense, quite religious. And he had this sort of catchphrase, you know, would you like some bread? I don't do bread. You know, would you like a drink? I don't do drink. And I found it was lovely. Everything you asked him, I don't do that. And I kind of used that with two, you know, pretty much sort of. And I'm kind of a great kind of dog lover myself. And I think this is a guy who actually really doesn't have any friends and doesn't want to have any friends, but he has this one relationship in his life, which is his dog that he calls his associate.
Uh-huh.
And I just had really fun with this character. And without giving too much away, I think he's going to reappear sometime.
Yes, we get the sense, you know, something about dog treats, but we'll let the we'll let the reader discover that for themselves.
It's great to talk to you. It's lovely. It's so nice that you're so enthusiastic about my books. I'm just so grateful. It's really nice.
Peter, I'm going to guess that there are some listeners out there who are saying, you know, I don't know Peter James as a writer, but I know him for something else. Was he, like, involved with a movie or something? Don't you have some sort of other job? Haven't you had something to do with movies?
Yeah, well, I had a day job for a long time before I've been, like, full-time writing now since 2005, but before that, I alternated between writing and making movies. The last film that I made, which I was the producer of, was Merchant of Venice with Al Pacino and Jeremy Irons. But I much prefer writing, because when you make a movie, it's always a committee. Mm. You have about 20 different people who all claim ownership to the film. You know, you have two or three four producers, and they all say, it's my movie. The director says, actually, no, it's my movie. And then you have your, like, four lead actors, and they all say, no, darling, it's our film. And then you have the art director who says, no, this thing would look absolutely rubbish if it wasn't for me. And then you have the editor saying, actually, I saved this film, darling. It's my film, really. And you always end up in a massive compromise. The lovely thing about writing is you don't have to change a single word. I mean, obviously, I do listen to my editor, but I love that freedom. And the most satisfying thing of all, because I'm not that well known over here at this time, but just the most satisfying thing to me was last year Dead Like You stopped James Patterson getting to number one in the UK, and Dead Man's Grip this year stopped Jeffrey Deaver getting to number one with the Carte Blanche book.
And knowing James Patterson, he took that as a personal affront, because James lives in the number one slot, and there is no other spot that will make him happy.
I'm really sad to hear that, but I upset him so much. Jeffrey Deaver took it really well. I met him in New York in July as a conference there. He came up to me, and he put his hands around my throat. He said, you bastard. He said, 94 effing books. He said, "You beat me by 94 effing books." And he went around telling everybody. And I had a T-shirt made, which I sent him, which has got the picture of him strangling me on the front, 94 effing books underneath. And on the back, it's got JD002.
I'm sure he wears it proudly.
He's a nice man.
You actually had someone take the picture of him while he was throttling you?
He wanted a picture of his taken of him throttling me.
Oh, okay. Peter James joins us. His new novel is Dead Man's Grip. Is there another book that's already finished? I'm guessing that you put this one out in the UK a while ago.
Dead Man's Grip came out in the UK in end of May. And it was great. It went straight to number one and was there for a couple of weeks. And it's just coming out in soft cover. So America's just a little bit sort of roughly 6 months lag. And I'm working on the next one right now. I'm always late on schedule. So I'm sitting in my hotel room and every minute I can snatch, I'm working away on it. I'm writing about a movie star, about a big movie being made in Brighton, and it's going to have it's got a star in it who is sort of think Madonna. It's sort of slightly based on a combination between her and Lady Gaga. A kind of big superstar who's living in LA, and just before she flies to England to take the starring role, somebody tries to kill her. The police then get tipped off that she's got this kind of crazed stalker who's going to be after her. So it's kind of fun because I'm able to put some of my movie experience into the book. And the book is it's about the affair, the love affair between King George IV and his mistress Maria Fitzherbert. And I've got the producer, in the pavilion, and there's a curator of the pavilion saying, "Well, the producer says, I think we're going to have them sitting under this big chandelier." And the curator says, "Yeah, but actually the chandelier wasn't there when George was going out with it." Yeah, well, who cares? This is a movie.
So how did you get into movies? I mean, there must be a story there.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I really had two ambitions. I wanted to make films and to write books. And I never, for a million years, thought I would ever succeed at doing either. Uh-huh. And I went to film school when I was 19. And then I came out and I went out to live in Canada because I had an uncle out there and the film and television business was really kicking off there. And I got a job as a gopher on a television show. A gopher is like the lowest human life form on a television set. Uh-huh. You run errands, you go for this, go for that, literally. And it was a daily program for preschool children called Polka Dot Door. And one day the producer was in a panic and he said, the writers all, we haven't got a show today. So I read your CV, you won your school poetry prize once. Yeah. He said, "Could you write today's show?" I was 22, and the next thing is I'm writing this 3 days a week for the next year. I was, amazing kind of break in that sense. And then I met up, I'd had this idea for a kind of horror movie that I'm kicking around in my head, and then I met a young American director then who just was putting together a film called Children Should Play with Dead Things. It's a very low-budget horror movie. Uh-huh. And I managed to raise the money for it, and that got shot in Florida. And then we started making more horror movies. We made a whole raft of really tasteless horror films. I Dismembered Mama, Blood Orgy of the She-Devils.
Lovely.
And then I wrote, I always liked comedy, and I wrote and produced a comedy with the actor Terry Thomas. He was in The Great Race.
Loved him. The Gap Between the Teeth, all the Blue Murder at St. Trinian's movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I wrote and produced this film with him in it, and I think Shatcher Leslie Phillips. And it came out, and the most important critic in England, Barry Norman, described it as the worst British film since the Second World War and the least funny British funny film ever made.
Oh, my. Peter James has been our guest. His new novel is Dead Man's Grip, and I have just enough time for one more quick question. Is it true that you did the first electronic book or one of the first electronic books?
Yes, it is true. I wrote a novel called Host, which actually was published in the States in about 1994, And it was about a computer scientist who wanted to download his brain into a computer and have his body frozen so that he could essentially live forever. And I got a lot of research help from Sussex University's Cognitive Science Department, which was Britain's equivalent to MIT, I guess would be the nearest nearest equivalent. And a couple of students there said, you know, it was all the really early days of the internet. It was the end of 93, and they said, have you ever thought about putting a book out electronically so you could read it on the computer? And I phoned my editor at Penguin, the marketing director at Penguin, and I said, what do you think? He said, hey, it's a great idea. And they did some castings, and the next thing is they actually published the book in 1994, in addition to the print form, on two floppy disks, on a Mac platform and a PC platform. Hmm. And it was amazing because it was very clunky. At the end of the book, you got sort of 30 seconds of me saying, thank you for reading this. But you could sort of click on links and about the research, and you could see pictures of people frozen in cylinders in Rivervale in California. Uh-huh. But the interesting thing was the reaction of the world press. It just exploded in terms of anger. I was front page headline of every single Italian newspaper, saying this man is killing the novel. I was dragged on the Today Program, which is the most influential radio show in England, and pilloried. You know, why would anybody want to read a book with a computer? One newspaper, The Times, did this wonderful, funny piece. Actually, I have to say, the guy humping his desktop computer down to the beach. Yeah, and having his wife standing peddling a dynamo behind him while he reads his book. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. And I was invited to be a keynote speaker at a big conference at UCLA on the future of the novel. And I turned up there about as jet-lagged as I am now. And I find I'm on this panel with Steve Jobs, the head of Time Warner, and Nicholas Negroponte. I kind of got through it, and I said, you know, the electronic book will come into its own the day it's nicer and more convenient to read than the printed page. And I think, you know, we're pretty much there now in terms of, you know, I still love printed books, but I have a Kindle and I have an iPad, and they have a use. You know, it's great if you're traveling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the nicest things, you know, I had an email from a soldier, said I'm just going out in the Afghan desert, and I'm taking my Kindle, and I've downloaded all seven of your Roy Grace novels onto it. He said, you know, I could never have taken seven books in my rucksack.
Well, Peter, it's really been a pleasure to have you on the program.
It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Vic. Thank you very much for having me on.
Our guest has been Peter James. His new novel is Dead Man's Grip. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week for a scintillating new novel from Denise Mina. It's called The End of the Wasp Season in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.